Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
On this episode of The Conversation Piece, we're pleased to share Manulife presents The Walrus Talks Nature, supported by TransCanada Trail and produced by The Walrus Lab. On the podcast, climate, academic, business, and Indigenous experts from all walks of nature talk about how having access to diverse environmental spaces and engaging diverse people in them can promote physical and mental health, as well as help to restore and preserve the Earth. What can oil and the pipeline that delivers the oil to all the pipelines across Canada and beyond tell you about people and nature? Understanding how past societies, economies, and communities have interacted with nature can reveal the challenges and needs of the environment, as well as highlight the differences and nuances of today that require new and innovative solutions. Welcome to Manulife Presents The Walrus Talks Nature, supported by TransCanada Trail and produced by The Walrus Lab. I'm Emma Mackenzie Hillier. Who we are now, how we interact with nature, and where we live, depending on the time in history, have exposed local environmental disruptions. Those change over time. Eventually, they've revealed themselves as the ecosystems, climate change, and the biosphere issues of today. Sean Courage is a Canadian environmental historian at Toronto Metropolitan University. He examines the relationship between people and nature and how they've interacted and think about nature over time in Canada. Sean spoke at Manulife Presents The Walrus Talks Nature, supported by TransCanada Trail.
So, my name is Sean Courage. I'm a Canadian environmental historian from Toronto Metropolitan University. For those of you who don't know, environmental historians study the relationships between people and the rest of nature in the past. We explore how people have interacted with and thought about the natural world over the course of human history. The story I want to tell you this evening is about just that, how people have interacted with and thought about nature over time in Canada. And to do so, I'm going to share three brief episodes of how people in Canada thought about their relationship with something we struggle with still to this day, oil and the pipelines that deliver oil to consumers across Canada and beyond. I'm sometimes asked if Canadians always opposed the construction of oil pipelines, and the answer is yes, but not in the ways we might think of today. So the story I hope to tell to you today will illustrate three things. One, how people interact with and think about nature is shaped by who we are, our identities. Two, how people interact with and think about nature is shaped by where and how we live, our geographies and our economies. And three, how people interact with and think about nature changes over time, our histories. So to understand this story, you need to know a little bit about how Canada moves oil from the places where it's drawn from the earth to the places where we refine it and burn it. Canada has been a major producer of oil since the late 1940s, and most of that oil comes from Alberta. The people who consume most of that oil live very far from Alberta, in Vancouver, Toronto, Montreal, Seattle, Chicago. To move crude oil from Alberta to all of these distant places, corporations and governments built three main trunk pipelines from the 1950s to the 1980s. One travels from Edmonton eastward through to the United States Midwest, Toronto, and Montreal. That's called the Interprovincial Pipeline. Another travels in the other direction, westward from Edmonton to Vancouver, and that's called the Trans Mountain Pipeline. And then a third travels from the Northwest Territories south to Alberta and then carries onward to those other two pipelines, and that's called the Norman Wells Pipeline. And together, they consist of one of the world's largest oil pipeline systems, and they deliver billions of liters of crude oil every year. The first episode is from 1952. A man named C.J. Lewis went door to door on Lyndhurst Road collecting signatures from his neighbors in Burnaby, British Columbia. The Trans Mountain Oil Pipeline was going to be built under their front yards. They're going ahead with this thing without consulting the property owners, and there's no compensation for destruction of our shade trees, Lewis told members of the Burnaby City Council. The council was somewhat at a loss for what to do. They didn't believe they had any authority to determine the route of this pipeline. They decided to contact the pipeline company to see what could be done, but in the words of Burnaby's mayor, the measure's under the jurisdiction of the Public Utilities Commission. It can go wherever it likes. Episode 2, 1961. During a National Energy Board hearing into an extension of the interprovincial pipeline in southern Ontario, settler farmers turned up at the hearings to raise their concerns. They were concerned about the potential adverse effects on the environment where they farmed, degradation of topsoil, damage to drainage systems, oil spills. Norman Robertson, a local farmer, appeared at this hearing representing a group of farmers in his community. He made the case for moving the pipeline to a different route in order to avoid crossing farmland in his area. In his closing remarks to the board, he said, "We don't oppose this pipeline. We think it's a benefit to the Canadian economy. And as suggested, it's a fine thing to have. But future planning is so important that to be ruthless about it and to not consider what our children and our children's children are going to find would be a detriment to all concerned." Episode 3, 1980. By this time, Indigenous people had finally won the opportunity to have their voices heard on these matters. And when a company proposed to build an oil pipeline in the southern Mackenzie Valley from Norman Wells in the Northwest Territories to Alberta, members of the Dene Ta First Nation showed up at a hearing to express their opposition. Pierre Bassa, a trapper from Treaty 8 territory, told the board the following. "There are numerous oil and gas wells all over my trap line. I had to evacuate from my cabin once when a pipeline broke. This fall, I'll have to go further up north because of this. There have been oil spills, pipeline ruptures in the past. Sometimes I've found rabbits covered in oil. Their tracks leave black marks." These three vignettes of Canadians from the past speaking out and sharing their concerns about the development of oil pipelines leave us with traces of the ideas that people once used to describe their relationships with nature. Each saw potential environmental harms to nature: the destruction of shade trees in a suburban neighborhood, the degradation of farmland, damage to wildlife used for hunting. Their views of those harms were shaped by their identities, how they engaged with and worked with nature, a suburban landowner who landscaped his front yard for beauty and aesthetics, a settler farmer who plants and harvests crops, an Indigenous trapper whose people have lived with and used wildlife resources of the land since time immemorial. What's most striking, though, is the language they didn't use when expressing these ideas: ecosystem, climate change, biosphere. The way people in Canada have thought about nature and how best to protect it has changed over time. The concerns expressed in these three episodes were more local than global. They were tied to immediate experiences with the disruptive effects of oil pipelines in daily life and anxieties about the future. To understand how people thought about and debated nature protection in the past, we have to consider the context of who they were, where they lived, and how they related to their environments. And to understand our environmental debates in the present, we could strive to do the same thing. Thank you.
Sean Courage is a Canadian environmental historian at Toronto Metropolitan University. He encourages society to have humility and consider that nature and its environment are always changing, and our awareness of it is what will inform the future. Sean spoke at Manulife Presents The Walrus Talks Nature, supported by TransCanada Trail. To hear more of these talks, subscribe to the conversation piece on your favorite podcast platform, or you can register for upcoming events online or in a city near you by visiting thewalrus.ca/events.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.